and welcome to this SearchSecurity.com podcast. I'm Eric Parizeau. It's great to have you with us. In this podcast, we're going to count down the top five ways to make network access control technology work with your existing network security tools. Joining us today is Mike Chappell, CISA, CISSP, and IT security professional with the University of Notre Dame. Thanks for being here today, Mike.
Thanks, Eric. It's a pleasure.
Before we get started, I want to mention that this podcast is part of our Integration of Networking and Security School, which you can visit at any time by navigating to searchsecurity.com/netsec. That's searchsecurity.com/netsec. Mike, let's set the stage before we begin the countdown. The network access control vendor market has taken a bit of a beating as of now, Q1 2008, but the technology really is making some inroads. So, Mike, in a nutshell, is NAC getting a bad rap?
Yes, I think it is, Eric. And I know I've read some of those same analyst reports, and all of the talking heads out there are saying that NAC is down and that enterprises are taking a wait-and-see attitude. And I think to some extent that's true. But if you look at the numbers, a recent study showed that 26% of enterprises have actually already deployed some sort of NAC solution. And I think many of those enterprises that we see taking the wait-and-see approach are learning that the NAC marketplace is starting to mature. And I believe that this year is going to be the year that we see that 26% number jump substantially.
Okay, then, let's start the countdown. Tip number five for making NAC technology work with your existing network security tools: think big, but start small. Mike, what does that mean?
Well, Eric, what I mean by that is that you really need to take a phased approach to NAC. You know, like a lot of complex IT projects, you really need to have some sort of phased rollout. And you need to look at the scope of the project. And one of the first things is to figure out how you can do a NAC deployment with a limited scope. And that might vary depending upon your organization and the goals of your NAC deployment. But some of the ways that you could limit that scope are perhaps looking at it from a geographical point of view if you're a large distributed enterprise, and maybe beginning a NAC deployment in an individual campus or building or a particular city, you know, depending upon the distribution of your organization. An alternative might be looking at a scope limitation based on the types of policies that you try to enforce. Maybe you start with a very limited NAC policy that just requires authentication or just looks at antivirus configuration, for example, and then you do your phased rollout by slowly expanding that policy. And then and one other alternative might be based on network medium, where many organizations consider their wireless network to be a greater risk than their wired network because of the fact that you don't need physical access to a network jack to attempt to join a wireless network. So maybe your wireless network is the first place to think about rolling out NAC. But once you've determined that scope, it's a good idea to still do some type of phased deployment. So if we think about a common strategy, one way many organizations do it is to start with a pilot project. You know, limit the NAC deployment to a very small group of people, your friends, the people who are going to be friendly to testing out a new technology and know that there are going to be bumps in the road and ups and downs as you try the rollout, and they're willing to roll with the punches a little bit as far as that goes. So maybe you get some folks from the IT organization and some known customers who've done this type of stuff with you in the past, who are going to be testing out the client software, testing out your policies, and looking for the impact they're going to have on the organization. Once you've done that, you can think about rolling it out to a larger user population. And when you do that rollout, one of the most important things you can do is run your NAC deployment in monitoring mode first. And where the NAC device is sitting on the network, it's monitoring traffic, it's interacting with the client, and it's making decisions about whether a client should be allowed on the network or not, but it's not enforcing that decision. And then, but it is logging it so that you can take those logs and review them and look at patterns of activity and spot potential trouble spots before they occur in your NAC deployment. Then you can move on to the third phase, and that's the remediation. You want to get as many of those problems out of the way up front as you can. So you're looking at those violations that were logged that would have blocked a user from accessing, and you're educating users about what they can do, or you're educating the support staff, depending upon the climate in your organization and the support strategy, and you're remediating those systems before you actually go on to the final phase of requiring NAC compliance before allowing network access. Another key point to keep in mind is that there are going to be scenarios that you don't plan for as you go through this process. So leave yourself plenty of time and plenty of leeway to be able to handle those as they arise.
All right, continuing on, item number 4 in our countdown of the top 5 ways to get NAC to work with existing security tools, make an early decision on inline or out of line. Mike, why is that important?
Well, Eric, there are two fundamentally different approaches to NAC that dictate the architecture, the products that you're going to be able to choose, and how you decide to roll it out in your organization. And the first of those technologies is an inline approach, where the NAC device is actually sitting between the user and the network, and it could be at any level in the network. It could be at a very high level, or it could be down very close to the user. But all the traffic between that user and systems beyond them is actually passing through the NAC device. The other approach is an out-of-band solution, where the NAC device actually is not sitting in line with the network. The traffic isn't passing through it, but before the user is able to pass traffic through the network, they authenticate to the NAC device, pass a health check, and then the NAC device instructs the switch, for example, to assign the user to a particular VLAN. So those are two different technology options, and you really need to think about your organization and how these different technologies will play within your enterprise infrastructure before you can go start looking at individual NAC solutions.
Mike, in your experience, what tends to be the key decision-making factor in choosing inline versus out of line? I'd imagine the overall size and scope of the network has to be a key issue there.
Yes, that's definitely true. You do need to look at the organization and topology of your network and where you put these different types of devices. So if we look at some of the pros and cons of each, if you think about an inline device, one of the most important points there is that when you deploy an inline NAC solution, it's very possible that you're creating a single point of failure on your network, where since the traffic has to pass through that NAC device, if that NAC device fails, you might have a partial or complete network outage. Like any other network device with traffic passing through it, a NAC device is also going to add some degree of latency. And whether that's measurable or significant to your organization is going to depend upon your service level agreements and your architecture, but it's something to keep in mind. An inline device can also cause scalability issues, because I mentioned earlier you can place them at any point in the network, where they're very close to the endpoints or they're up higher in the hierarchy. But the problem that you're going to experience, the lower that you go in the network, the more devices that you actually need. So there are financial considerations to that perspective. Out-of-band devices, on the other hand, eliminate some of those issues. The single point of failure is gone. You won't be able to, if the NAC appliance fails, you won't be able to have new devices join the network. But those devices that have already passed the NAC posture checking and have been successfully joined to the network are still going to be able to pass traffic because the NAC device doesn't have to pass that traffic through. Also, any latency considerations are eliminated because the NAC device, again, isn't passing that traffic. One of the other limitations to out-of-band devices, though, is that you're going to be limited in your choices of response, where an inline device actually can tinker with the traffic and make decisions based upon particular sessions that are taking place. The out-of-band device is making that one-time decision, and it's providing instructions to the switch. So your choices of response, for example, are limited to things like shutting down a switch port, changing VLAN assignments, and that sort of thing.
All right, moving on with the countdown of the top 5 tips to make NAC work with existing security tools. Number 3, buying NAC is like getting married. Select your partner carefully. Mike, I could take that in a lot of different directions here, but without getting myself in too much trouble, it sounds like organizations need to remember that this is a decision they'll have to live with for a long time.
Yes, that's very true, Eric. And the point I'm making there is that you really need to put a lot of careful thought into your NAC vendor selection. You're launching an extremely expensive project. It could be, depending on the size of your enterprise, $250,000 or more to deploy NAC, and it's going to be disruptive to users. You're going to have to possibly deploy software. You're going to be changing a lot of things about the way you do business. So when you make that decision, you want to be sure to make a decision that you're going to be able to live with for a long time. And as I mentioned earlier, we are seeing consolidation in the NAC marketplace. For example, Vernier Networks recently exited the market, and one of the things that you should consider when you're looking at a vendor is their track record, how stable the company appears, and whether you think they're going to be around as long as you'd like to have the product in place on your network. One thing that I recommend to everybody I talk to about NAC is that you give strong consideration to your switch supplier. And you can potentially eliminate some interoperability issues there by having the same supplier for your switches and for your NAC solution.
Okay, Mike, we're getting close to the top of the list. Item number 2 on our countdown of the top 5 tips for making NAC work with your existing security tools: assess your infrastructure in advance. Mike, what specifically should enterprises be looking for here?
Well, there are a couple of key areas where NAC depends upon portions of the existing infrastructure. Obviously, if you're deploying a solution where the NAC device is going to interact with the switches, you need to be able to know that your switch fabric is going to support NAC. And in a lot of cases, in older networks, you might have to make significant upgrades to your switch infrastructure to be able to provide that support. There was a study recently done by an outfit called Infonetics Research that found that organizations deploying NAC on average spent about 2/3 of their budget on switch upgrades. So that's one example of some of the hidden costs of a NAC deployment. The other thing to think about is your directory ready? If you're using Active Directory or whatever directory infrastructure you have in your organization, you certainly want to integrate that with NAC to the extent that you can, because you probably have a great deal of information about organizational units in your business and roles of individual users that the NAC policies might want to leverage. So you need to think about whether your directory is ready and you're providing the necessary information in there to be able to support NAC.
All right, Mike, we've reached the top of the list. The number 1 tip for making NAC work with existing security tools: start with policy, not technology. Mike, tell us more about this one. I know my assumption is that if policy were a panacea, then there wouldn't be a need for NAC technology in the first place, but maybe you can elaborate some more.
Sure, Eric. Well, my point there is that NAC is a policy enforcement mechanism. It's very easy to get caught up in the gee whiz technology factor and go out and play with your new toy. But the bottom line is that you need to purchase NAC realizing that it's a mechanism with which to enforce your organization's security policy. Before you evaluate NAC solutions, and definitely before you try to implement, you need to make sure that you know the policy that you're trying to enforce, and that you plan your deployment from that perspective. So what are the exact security requirements that you're expecting NAC to fill? It's also important to make sure you're all on the same page around the planning table in terms of terminology. I was recently in a meeting at an organization that was planning to deploy NAC with folks from the networking team and folks from the security team, and they started talking about NAC, and it took about an hour for everyone to realize that the networking team was thinking of NAC purely as a who's allowed to access the network and how are we authenticating them perspective, while the security team was thinking about posture checking. So you definitely want to make sure the terminology is all lined up. And then when it comes to what the policy questions that you're going to try to answer with NAC, there are a lot of things you need to think about. Like almost everybody who deploys NAC does some sort of antivirus checking. But what exactly is your policy there? Are you going to enforce a policy that requires everyone in the organization to use a single package that your enterprise supports? Like, for example, to say everybody must have McAfee virus scan? Or are you going to allow users to access the network if they have any antivirus package that's on a long list of approved vendors? Also, with antivirus policies, people often say, we want to make sure that users have current signatures. Well, what does that mean? Do they have to have today's signatures? Can they be a week old? Can they be a month old? What's the right balance for your organization? When you think about controls, do you plan to do only admission controls? Do you want to just be able to answer the question, should this person be allowed on the network, or do you want to have some types of post-admission controls also, like you want to assign different users to different VLANs, where systems that don't perhaps meet a antivirus policy are assigned to a quarantine VLAN, where the only thing that they can do is access a server where they can update their antivirus signatures. Do you want to limit users with different roles in the organization to different VLANs based upon their roles? And what are you going to do about guests? Are you going to allow guest access at all? Do they need to be pre-registered? Who can approve the guest access? And then what resources are those guests going to be able to access? Perhaps they're placed on a VLAN by themselves where the only thing that they can do is access the internet with the intention that they would connect back to their company's VPN.
Mike, as I said off the top, this podcast is for our network security school, and the overarching theme there is getting networking and security pros to work together. So from a teamwork perspective, what does it really take to roll out NAC successfully?
Well, Eric, it's absolutely essential to approach NAC with a team perspective. It's a technology that touches almost everyone within an IT organization and it can have a significant user impact. So you want to from the earliest point possible, get all of those players at the table. Get your security folks who are involved in creating and setting the policies there. Make sure the networking team is going to have to live with this and who owns the switch infrastructure that the NAC system might interact with are there. Also, you know, I mentioned earlier making sure your directory is up to par. You want to make sure that the people who understand and architect that directory are involved in the process. And then perhaps most importantly, that the representatives of the users are there. So in an IT organization, that probably comes from the desktop support team. But you want to make sure that throughout the process, people are thinking about how users are going to be impacted, how the user experience is going to change, and how that's going to be communicated to the broader organization.
Okay, let's recap our list of the top five tips for getting NAC to work with existing security tools. Number five, think big but start small. Number four, determine in line or out of line or out of band. Number three, select your NAC partner carefully. Number two, assess your infrastructure in advance. And number one, start with policy, not technology. Mike Chappell of the University of Notre Dame, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Eric.
For more materials in our Integration of Networking and Security School, visit searchsecurity.com/netsec. You can also listen to more of our podcasts on our podcast page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. We thank you for joining us. I'm Eric Parizo. Stay safe out there.